session number 11773, Mr. R.H. Langdon Davis, Reel 3.
So Langdon Davis, Reel 3.
The Germans, whose supply lines were had been diminished by the activities of partisans on the mainland, were using light shipping to supply all their troops, really right down the Adriatic as far as Greece. And we used to go out and try and sink these things, both by day and by night, with our rockets. Now, we had two different sorts of armoured. The rockets were either armed with 25-pound armour-piercing heads or with 60-pound high-explosive heads. And it really rather depended upon the target which we used. Because of the distances involved, there was no such thing as aerial refueling in those days. We used to fly with a long-range tank under one wing and four 60-pound rockets under the other wing and fly sideways, or so it felt. Of course, as you used up the petrol in your long-range tank, and then you fired your rockets, the whole balance of the airplane altered completely. Nonetheless, we were, I think, fairly successful in sinking quite a lot of shipping. One chap in our squadron, unfortunately, by mistake, sank the pride and joy of the Yugoslav partisan navy, a captured gunboat, but it was where it shouldn't have been. It wasn't our fault. And occasionally we attacked land targets as well. I can remember, for example, being shown by the intelligence officer who had received by what means I don't know, a picture postcard of a village in Yugoslavia, and on the message was, "Would you please bomb the house marked with a cross? It is occupied by the Gestapo. Don't hit the house next door, it's where I live." And that was the sort of target we were sent out of. We were fairly accurate. The method was to approach as low as possible. In fact, you had to dive to get up enough speed because the rockets had to be fired. I think it was at an airspeed of 200 miles an hour, and you had to dive a hurricane to achieve 200 miles an hour. And so you flew straight and level, straight at your target. Really, I suppose as close as you dare, but only a few hundred yards away from the target. Left, rip your rockets and pulled away, and went home as quickly as possible. Had quite heavy losses, I'm afraid. This went on from the early spring of 1944 until that autumn. My last operational flight, I remember, was on Friday the 13th of October 1944, and that was from Greece. We sent a detachment down to an aerodrome the top left-hand corner of the Peloponnesus. I can't remember the name of the place now, it'll come back to me in a moment. And we had to, we were sent out to fire right up the east coast, the Aegean side of the Greek mainland. And but at that time, the Germans were pulling out of Greece, and we told we were to attack them. We would let them get away, let them get out of Greece. So it was really rather an unexciting last operational trip. But I remember it from the fact that it was so long that even with the long-range tanks, we used to fly in formations of four, and number four always used more petrol than anybody else because of his weaving to keep in formation. And I remember when we landed on the runway back at our home base, the number four's petrol ran out as he was actually rolling along the runway on landing, so we cut that one a bit fine. But it was an extraordinary sort of sidelight to the war, partly because of these rockets were such a novelty, and nobody really seemed to know what to do with us. And for a time, we used to tell command what we were going to do, rather than the other way round, which is the usual thing. And this fitted in quite well with the operating with the partisans, because they would tell us of something that needed hitting, and we would go out and try and hit it. When we were on Vis, we had the partisans actually assisting our ground crew and would refuel our aeroplanes and rearm them. And we were all very, very friendly terms with Marshal Tito's partisans. In fact, we all wore, they presented us with badges, and I still have a photograph of myself wearing a red star with a hammer and sickle in the middle, which was presented to me by the Dalmatinska Brigada of the Yugoslav Army of National Liberation. They were the only ones that actually put a hammer and sickle in the middle of the star. But I keep the photograph to show to Americans and people like that who might be amused.
Did you meet Tito?
I didn't actually meet Tito. I very nearly did, because he spent some time on Vis. And at that, and I was there, I remember one night, there were some Russians there with training planes, and they asked permission from our aerodrome control to do some circuits and bumps at night, and this was given to them. And in fact, they weren't going to do circuits and bumps at all. They were going to whisk Marshal Tito off to Moscow. This is the famous occasion when Marshal Tito went to Moscow without telling Churchill, and Churchill reproved him for it, and he said, "Well, why should I tell you? You didn't tell me when you were going to see Roosevelt." That was the night that that happened on Otok Vis, as it was called. They were a pretty wild bunch, but very, very agreeable companions, these Marshal Tito's partisans.
What impression did you get of the military threats they were posing to the enemy?
Well, I think it was very considerable. I mean, they had drawn very considerable German forces away from the other theatres of war to deal with them. By this time, talking about the summer of 1944, the partisans had become reasonably well equipped, armed, and they'd all got splendid uniforms. We gave them arms, and the Russians gave them splendid uniforms. And from the way one could judge, they were a pretty formidable fighting force.
Do you have any contact at all with the royalist guerrillas of Mihailovich?
Not at this time. Funnily enough, I had done at an earlier stage in my career when I was in number 123 squadron near to Brook. We had a flight of the Royal Yugoslav Air Force. A number of their officers were actually part of our squadron. And I always remember that they were very nice, friendly chaps. And I always remember there were two of them who weren't quite sort of the same as the rest. They were both regular officers. And it transpired that as soon as they had the opportunity, these two had joined Tito's Air Force. And the other ones who were royalists were really more or less interned. They were taken out of the squadron and put in a hotel somewhere until the war was over.
Who did that?
The British military authorities. But the two that joined the partisans, there were two partisan squadrons formed in Egypt, who joined us in Italy. One of them was a Hurricane squadron, like us, and one was a Spitfire squadron. And the two that I had known, one of whom I got to know very well, quite a friend of mine, they were in the Spitfire squadron, but I'm afraid they were too brave, perhaps, is the way to put it, and they very soon perished by what we would have regarded as rather foolhardy tactics.
So your contact with the Royalist Yugoslav Air Force in Tobruk must have been May 1943, was it?
That's right, yes, it was long before this. May 43, yes.
Just going back to the partisans on the island of Vis, do you think they were all communists?
No, certainly not. As usual, the communists are the efficient people who can organise things, and a lot of other people follow them for that reason. And of course, in parts, when they took over, particularly after the Italian surrender, large parts of Yugoslavia suddenly became unoccupied, as it were, before the Germans could get in, and the partisans no doubt were able to put pressure on the local population to join up in that short period. But I remind you, say, were they all communists? And they even had a padre, a partisan padre. When we were in near Taranto, we used to visit from time to time. I used to visit a Yugoslav a British hospital for Yugoslav partisans, quite a big hospital, and I got to know the interpreter, the official interpreter, quite well. And I remember going down there and to their mess in the hospital, and there was this padre, just like any other padre, with a red star on his battle dress. My friend told me that he had been rebuked by the padre for improper conversation, and he said that he felt the need of something very badly, and when asked what it was, he said belladonna, a pun. And the padre rebuked him for lustful thoughts.
Was this a Catholic or an Orthodox?
Catholic. This would have been a Croatian Catholic, I suppose.